It's Garden Talk with Noel. Noel, this week I thought we'd go through some of the questions that have come in, and we've got one from Brian, who's a wee bit concerned about whether it's a good time to take cuttings or not.
It's interesting that Brian has written in for this because recently there's been a few people wanting to do the same thing, and they've come in and asked me about propagating material and or propagating mixes and that sort of stuff. One thing I need to stress is that we are now entering a slower period of growth in our gardens for many of our plants. We're in autumn and we're heading into the second month of autumn. And what's out on the internet right now, if people are following internet and websites...
I know where you're going with this.
...is what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere because they're entering into spring.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of a confusion going on. People are reading this and they're thinking this is the time to do it. In actual fact, you're better off to wait until either midwinter and take hardwood cuttings when shrubs, certain deciduous shrubs or trees, or particularly shrubs, have become completely dormant. Say, for instance, a hydrangea. Okay, you can take hardwood cuttings when the time is right, but in the winter time, and you can take them again in the spring. So this is where people are seeing all these sorts of things being done in England at the moment and in the United States. And of course, if they're not translating that to a different season. So always bear this in mind. This is really important. Otherwise, people could be setting themselves up for failure.
So what would happen if you, say, took a cutting now and you tried to do something? Would it damage the donor plant?
Well, what would happen is, the thing is, when you're taking a cutting, there is no thing as a root system on the plant.
No.
So there's a set period of time that the plant or that cutting has energy within itself to stay alive. In actual fact, it could just almost be used like pop into a glass of water and be like a cut leaf, you know. But cuttings into a glass of water isn't always the answer. So if you're taking, if you're wanting to propagate the likes of, say, some pittosporums, for instance, or some, or maybe coprosmas or some griselineas, if you want to extend your hedge or something like that, you're better off, if you want to take it now, sure, because these are evergreen species of plants. This is probably where a little bit of confusion can set in as well. You will need bottom heat. So you'll need some heat from underneath the propagating material or the tray to sort of stimulate the root growth. And you would put those cuttings into something like a hormone rooting powder or liquid. And the warmth combined with that will stimulate root development. But then you need to keep those cuttings warm for the rest of winter. So if you're in a commercial hothouse, for instance, that's a no-brainer because they've got the heaters going on, they've got the humidity happening. So those cuttings are constantly growing and they're in an environment that's conducive for putting on root growth. Not so much leaf growth, but root growth. Whereas in the home garden, we don't generally have those conditions. So this is where it can become rather tricky. So you can place your cuttings in a tray and put it on top of the hot water service.
But the again, I was just thinking about that, and you know, more and more people are moving to gas califonts or different forms, so we don't have the airing cupboards or the hot water cylinder cupboards that like we used to.
That's correct. And even if we did, you'd be putting your cuttings into a cupboard, and there's no sunlight.
No.
So the plants still need the sunlight factor. So if you've got a hot house and you can heat the hot house, then sure, go ahead and try and do it that way. If not, maybe hold off until the weather is better to do that for. That's around about the beginning of spring, where the plants can then continue to go forward. Our days get longer and our days get warmer.
That's very good advice. Very good advice. So there you go, Brian. Hopefully that one is of use to you.
So sorry to disappoint you. Yeah.
Now, we've had another question in from Margaret, and she wanted to know about cabbage white butterflies.
Oh, my goodness. She wouldn't be the only one, though. Cabbage white butterflies are out and about in great force right now. Now, there is a little bit of a misunderstanding in the fact that it's not the butterflies that eat your cabbages. It's the caterpillars that come from the butterflies. So they lay a tiny, tiny speck of an egg. You can hardly see this egg, and they are pretty fast at doing it. They land, they lay, they go. And these little tiny green caterpillars come out. They seem to be exactly the same colour as the foliage of the cabbages and the cauliflowers and the broccoli. And they start to eat, and they eat, and they eat, and they eat, and they start to nibble the bits and pieces away. Now, while your brassicas are young, I wouldn't worry too much. You can control them with the likes of, say, Deris dust and what have you. And you will need to reapply Deris dust if it rains or if you're watering it off.
Mm-hmm.
But while the plants are in an unproductive stage, it's not too bad an option. You can control them. It's only when they start to get the nice heads, especially cabbages, you want to protect those heads. Otherwise, when you start to cut those cabbages through, you'll find nice little grubs in between. So although that's a bit of protein, that's not reason why you would eat a cabbage.
Not good for a vegetarian.
No, they can sometimes get underneath the florets of the cauliflower and within the florets of also the broccoli as well. So they're very, very cunning. So really, it's about prevention. So understand that at the end of every summer, from February onwards, the cabbage wilts will often start to come into force.
Okay.
Now, we're getting our cold a little earlier, so I'm hoping that the cabbage butterfly population this year might be a little bit more short-lived.
I'm looking forward to just the ordinary houseflies going. There still seem to be a few hanging around. And I'm kind of wondering, is that a gauge, you know, when the flies disappear, do the cabbage white butterflies disappear?
Usually, because the temperature starts to get too cool and they start to hibernate again. So a bit of prevention, such as exclusion. So using some netting to exclude them. Don't use bird netting, it won't work. But you can use the fine gauze insect netting. And the netting needs to be kept away from the plant, so there needs to be a framework in place. So you don't just throw the netting on top of the plants, because there's always a way. Where there's a will, there is a way, and insects will always find a way of making sure that their species continues. They outnumber us 10 to 1 on this planet. They'll be here long after humans are finished.
So they
will always survive. So keep your netting away from the plants so they can't physically touch them. But it's getting a little late for that now. So you may have to resort to the likes of, say, some Deris dust. And maybe next season, look at encouraging more natural predators into the garden. So, you know, things such as wasps. And I know people think, oh, I don't want wasps. But they are very good predators, a lot of them, and more little birds. And I know they can be a problem too. But the little birds, once they find the insects, they'll clean them all up for you very naturally.
Yeah, just keep them away from the berries and things.
Absolutely. So there's a real balance that needs to happen in the garden.
Yeah, absolutely. One final question we've got in from Tina, and she wants to know what she can do with a load of fruit that has, you know, come off the tree. It's sort of dropping.
Yes. Now, this season might be an odd season for a few people. We've had an incredibly dry summer. I would dare say the most of January and all of February, we've just been dry, unless we are irrigating at home on a constant basis. But for those people that don't have that luxury of being able to turn on a tap, for instance, and they're on larger properties, it's difficult. So the long dry that we have faced, I wouldn't say it's been exceedingly hot, but it's just been dry, can sometimes shorten the lifespan of fruit that are forming on a tree. That could be apples, that could be pears, that could be citrus as well. And plants will go, okay, I'm not going to make them as big as normal. They're going to be a little smaller. So do expect your fruit to be just that little bit smaller. And I don't know whether you've experienced this, Dan, but I've been buying a few peaches lately. I don't have a peach tree in my own garden, but they've been dry and they've been a little tasteless. They haven't been as juicy. And I think that this may have a reflection on the dry climate that we've been receiving this past growing season. So it's important that we do keep the moisture levels up. It can be difficult for some people, as I said. But just be prepared that your fruit may want to come into season earlier. And pears, for instance, for those who have pears, pick them now. While you see your pears looking lovely on the plant, if you turn your pear up and it clicks off the actual stem itself, it's ready to harvest. Pears do not ripen on the tree.
Right.
They ripen from the inside out. Hence the reason when you go to the shops and you see pears on the shelf, they're all hard. People go, oh, none of them are ripe. Well, that's the way you need to pick them, because they ripen once you take them home.
A bit like avocados.
A bit like an avocado. Mm. That's true. Mm. So whereas apples, well, I always find that apples are best left as long as possible. If you can't, you know, if you can't because you've got a lot of bird activity,
yeah,
then try and cover them or net them, because they tend to get better with flavour if they're actually kept on the tree. But yes, people are going to experience fruit dropping, and that, or not coming to size, or even splitting, and that's because of the inconsistency in the availability of water that we've had over the summer period.
Because one of the other things that Tina did ask as well is, should she clear the trees and the bushes?
Definitely. If anything has fallen off the tree, unless you're right there while it's fallen, or it's fallen off just a couple of hours before, clear up what you can and take that away, because apples in particular and pears, if you've got coddling moth, well, that's just going to go straight into the ground and the whole cycle is going to be released again. One thing that people can do, though, with their fruit trees for the next season, they can start to do this now, and they can start to add a little bit of sulfate of potash around the base of their fruit trees and a little bit of superphosphate. Together, they work in hand. So you've got your phosphate element, which triggers a fruiting plant into wanting to flower in its rhythm,
right,
not earlier, but in its rhythm. And then the potassium that comes from the sulfate of potash will help to form those flowers really nice and strong, good for pollination, and then help to bring out good, strong fruit, which is nice and tasty. But applying them now gives the plant a full chance to take it up into its system. Applying it just when it comes into flower, they really don't have the same effect. So usually about 4 months, 5 months, 6 months in advance before they come into flower is key. So we are at a prime time now where people can start to put that around all their fruit trees, their stone fruit, apples, pears, all that sort of stuff for the next season. Unless they're, you know, just be light-handed with the phosphate, but you don't need to be too heavy-handed, and that will certainly help with next season's fruiting.
My infamous lemon tree, because I've spoken about it on numerous occasions on this program.
Dan's lemon tree.
Dan's lemon tree. Quite a good haul of lemons this year, to the point where, I mean, I'm picking them, giving them away, because there's too much for me to use. Should I leave, because a couple of years ago, last season, I had virtually nothing. This season, I've had a bumper crop. Mm-hmm.
Have you been peeing on it?
I haven't, no.
I think I remember telling you to pee on it.
Yeah.
Sorry, listeners.
that's why they're yellow. No. Should I take off any remaining fruit on the bush, or should I just leave it?
If you feel that the plant is looking a bit sickly or weak because it's trying to hold excessive amount of fruit, it's always important to reduce that amount of fruit, so you're reducing its burden. But it sounds to me like your plant is giving you the fruit as required. Mm. Just keep the moisture up to it if you need to, and you don't need to feed it while it's holding fruit, okay? Because what will tend to do is it'll go, oh, what's that? I'm just going to drop all that fruit,
right,
and take up the nutrition. So you don't need to throw food around its base. Let it go through its cycle. Not all the fruit will actually ripen at once. It's some will just sit green all the way through winter.
And leave those.
Yeah, because I take it you've got a Meyer lemon in that respect, because they sound like they're a very heavy. They are a very heavy producing citrus. And they will produce in batches, put it this way. Usually autumn is a good time, and early winter is a great time, and then early spring is a good time. So those are the times that those batches of fruit become abundant, so to speak. So pick what you can when they go yellow. It actually stops the plant from robbing from itself.
Right.
And then it continues on that cycle as normal. But don't hold back throwing a little bit of light fertilizer about every 3 months.
I've never been known to be light-handed with fertilizer in many things.
Little and often is the key.
Thanks, Noel. Really appreciate it. And if you do have any questions for Noel, you can do it via the website gardentalk.nz, or flick them via the Real 104 website, real104.com. Noel, thanks for your time. We'll catch up again next week.
Thank you, Dan.